Okay, let me just make one little caveat before I dive into the discipleship handbook about the discussion that we just had in the baptismal commitment, okay? And I want you to pay attention because I want you to hear what I'm saying. Some people, and there could be someone here, who will misunderstand what is being communicated. The bottom line to someone's preparation for baptism is a converted heart. Someone who has been born again. Okay? All that these are areas of instruction that the Bible gives that in many ways are evidences of someone's commitment to Christ as Lord of their life. And so when you're preparing someone for baptism, you're dealing with the heart. Do they really love Jesus? Do they love the Bible? Have they had a conversion? You're dealing with the mind. Do they understand truth? Do they know that when you die, you sleep until the resurrection? Do they know that hell is not burning forever and ever and ever? You know, the mind. Do they have the right belief system? And then the life. And the life is where the evidences of their conversion are clearly laid out, and those are the things that you saw us starting to look at a little more closely. We're not saying that someone is saved or the main issue with baptism is whether or not they eat pork or whether or not they return tithe. Those are not the main issues. But they do give evidence to someone's personal experience, and so they're important, and we don't want to neglect them, or we could baptize people who really have not had a hard experience with Christ. And so we want to help them. In many cases, by helping them through that baptismal process, you are actually helping them through their own conversion process. They're actually being helped through their own conversion. Last night, I was all excited to give the BibleStudyOffer.com presentation. I stood up and started to give it. Pastor Doug didn't have his notes printed out, so he stood up and he started walking off the stage. I saw everybody watching Pastor Doug. And then he got talking to people over there. I'm talking from the front. Everybody's watching Pastor Doug. Oh, they don't have a clue what I'm talking about. Get your notes already and get back on the stage so they'll pay attention to me. Anyway, but that's what happened. So I just wanted to make sure I put that caveat in there. You know I'm talking about, you want somebody who loves Jesus, and that's what you're really wanting. But we also believe that it's possible for somebody to just say they love Jesus and to not have had a genuine experience, and they want to be baptized because it's, you know, just cool to be baptized, or they feel like somehow it's going to make them more savable, or like they're going to be more sure of heaven if they get baptized or whatever, but they don't want to be a part of the discipleship experience. So that's why, in reality, besides just the discipleship that happens afterwards, the preparation you do in helping someone to make a commitment to Christ before baptism is one of the most important things for people staying in the church. We often talk about how it's all about what happens after baptism. We need to disciple them after, and I'm about to talk about that. But make no mistake about it, if you don't do proper preparation before baptism, then you've already got two strikes against you. And so you want to make sure that you do your work well. Do it lovingly. You have nothing to push. This is not a pressure situation. You can be as patient as you need to be, but you just lovingly help them along to make the decisions they need to make. Now, after someone's baptized, we've developed a resource that helps with discipling them, and I thought I would just take about 10 minutes and explain what's in here. So you have this book in front of you. You should have been given it, so yes. The ideal situation is that if you prepared someone for baptism and you're the one who studied with them, that you will be the one who mentors them afterwards. So basically, what we frequently have done is we'll study with someone and then we'll get into baptismal preparation studies and we'll be studying them about how often? About once a week, right? And then we finally get them ready and oh, this Sabbath is the big day and okay, you're all ready and we have the baptism. And then we hope you'll come to prayer meeting, and Sabbath school starts at 9:30, and we'll see you there. And there's not really anything beyond that's really systematic or intentional oftentimes. So that's what we were trying to do, is put something in place that was intentional and systematic with the discipleship handbook. So after they complete these weekly studies and they're ready for baptism, they start meeting weekly again with the mentor for the discipleship process. This is based on 26 weekly meetings. How many chapters are in the book? 26 chapters. That is how long? 6 months. So that's 6 months. Once a week, a mentor meets with a new member and takes them through this handbook. Now, let me tell you a little about what's in there. Right from the beginning, the first chapter is on discipleship, and it sets the tone. If you look at, for instance, page six, it tells you the spiritual habits that you're wanting the new member to build in the discipleship process. So, page six, there's 8 spiritual habits. Do you see them there at the bottom of page six? Hello? Okay. It says daily personal prayer, daily personal study of the Bible, daily morning and evening family worship, weekly Sabbath school attendance, weekly church attendance, weekly prayer meeting or midweek small group Bible study attendance, regular personal witnessing, and regular involvement in local church ministry. Those 8 things are basically what this entire 6-month process is intended to build in the new member. And you, as a mentor, what then is your... And if you're going to mentor them in these 8 spiritual habits, what type of obligation rests upon you? You're going to have to do those 8 things yourself, right? You're not going to say, you really need to be at prayer meeting every week. Now, I don't go, but I hear there's some really nice people there who will help you when you get there. You understand what I'm saying? I hate to say it, in any group that you talk to, you're probably only talking to 20% prayer meeting people, but hey, I got to say it, prayer meeting, midweek Bible study, whatever it is your church has, okay, it's something that should become part of the life of the Christian, and it's a wonderful experience. You may have gotten away from it, recommit to it when it's time to disciple that new member, right? It's a wonderful, hey, look, we have a lot of members discipling new members. It's going to elevate everyone. There's going to be recommitment, reconsecration. It's going to be good for all of us. So these are the 8 points that you're trying to establish. Now, the next thing you get into is the devotional life. The whole next section is on the devotional life. And at the end of the 2nd chapter, there's a practical application where it describes, is it the end? Yes. On page 14, in the middle of the page, it says, in the back of this discipleship handbook is a Bible and Spirit of Prophecy reading plan that will walk you through the entire Bible at a steady pace. Make a commitment to spend at least 30 minutes a day in prayer and study. So if you look in the back of the book, what do you see? A Bible and Spirit of Prophecy reading plan. This is based on 15 to 20 minutes of reading a day. So that means if they pray for 10 to 15 minutes and read for 15 to 20 minutes, then they have a half hour a day that you're encouraging them to commit in devotional time, and they're making their way through the Bible and the major Spirit of Prophecy books. Now, once you do that, when you meet with them each week, the first thing you're going to do before you go through the chapter together is you're going to have a brief time where you share an insight from your devotional time that week, and you ask them to share an insight from their devotional time. So they get into the habit of it. Now, how do I know that? Well, because I'm a mentor, and I'm following the mentor's guide. And the mentor's guide, starting on page 16, has one page for every weekly meeting, and it tells you exactly what to do. Okay? And when I get to meeting number 3, the first thing says devotional review. Each person share one insight or lesson gained from his or her daily devotional time that week. Then chapter discussion. Now, in the beginning of this mentor's guide, it tells you how much time to commit to each of these. So it's all laid out there. But then you read through the chapter together and discuss it. Then there are, in most chapters, meeting tasks, other things related to that topic that you might do right there in the meeting. Like when you're discussing prayer, you might discuss the importance of making an intercessory prayer list with the person because the mentor's guide tells you to do that. Now, there are some days, like look at page 21 of the mentor's guide, and it has an outside the meeting task. That means that sometime after this meeting, you're going to do what it says in the outside the meeting task. Invite the new member to your home for Friday or Sabbath sundown worship, or arrange for this to take place at the home of another church family. You're wanting them to see family worship modeled or sundown worship modeled. And so it's right there telling you, instructing you to do that. When you start talking about witnessing and personal mission of the church, then on page 23 it says arrange for the new member in the outside the meeting tasks to join you in a witnessing activity. So in order to check that off, you need to take them with you to something the church is doing, something personal outreach. And as you go through this book, it will have various different things that you're doing to help integrate the new member. There's other places where it says introduce them to three new members of the church that they have not met. Now, if they already know all the members of the church, then obviously you just check it off. But if they don't, if you're in a large church, then that's an opportunity for you to introduce them. Arrange for a Sabbath lunch invitation. So then you talk to someone and say, hey, we have a new member, so-and-so. Would you mind if we arranged for you to have them over for lunch and it would be a good chance to get to know them? Okay. And then you arrange this lunch invitation so they can get to know different members. The idea of the mentor's guide is that you are helping the member, you're being intentional about getting them integrated into the social aspects of the church and the ministry of the church. So if you just hand them this book, you will miss out sorely on the relationship you're building with them as a mentor and on the integration into the church that this does so well by just in a very paced way, integrating different aspects of church life so that they can become integrated into the church. Now, let me get back to this. Let's just talk about what's in here for a moment. So if you go to the table of contents, which is on page Roman numeral 6 and 7, in the very beginning here, chapter 2 is on the importance of the Bible, chapter 3, the importance of the spirit of prophecy, chapter 4, secret prayer, chapter 5, character development, chapter 6, family worship, and it gives an example of how to do family worship, and then the mentor's guide encourages you to take them and see them modeled, family worship modeled. Personal witnessing, chapter 7, talks about the mission of the Seventh-day Adventist Church and how now that they're a Seventh-day Adventist, our mission is their mission. Called to witness is about how every disciple of Christ is called to bear witness for Christ, and it's a call to personal ministry. Then church life, sacred assemblies. We talk about Sabbath school, prayer meeting, and church service, and the importance of those sacred assemblies of the church for every Seventh-day Adventist to make those habits in their life. We talk about the ministry of attendance. You know that attendance is not just something that you do for yourself. It's a ministry. When you don't attend prayer meeting, you bring down prayer meeting. When you don't attend Sabbath school, you bring down your church's Sabbath school. When you do, you encourage the other saints. There's a we're in this together kind of thing. This is important. It helps to establish it in their hearts. Attendance is not just something you do for yourself. It is a ministry. You want evidence of that? Hebrews chapter 10, it doesn't just say, let's not forsake the assembling of ourselves together. It says, let us consider one another, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. You're not just doing it for yourself. You're doing it for the encouragement of other people in the church. Attendance is a ministry. And Ellen White actually says, hey, if very few people go to the meeting, you should feel under double responsibility to go. I mean, that's pretty intense, isn't it? Okay, anyway. Sacred ceremonies, chapter 10, that talks about 8 ordinances of the church. I don't know if I can remember them all, but ordinances and ceremonies. Baptism, child dedication, communion, ordination, anointing, funerals, weddings, and something else. Weddings. Did I say the wedding? Yeah, foot washing is part of the communion, I think. I said child dedication. That's it? Oh, there's only seven? Okay. Well, hey, thanks. Anyway, it explains how and why we do the different ordinances and ceremonies of the church in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And then God of Order goes over the biblical reason for church organization and talks about how the Seventh-day Adventist Church is organized. Then Only One Thing to Fear talks about the history of the Seventh-day Adventist Church and how our doctrinal system was built through our history. Tell It to the World talks about the mission of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. It talks about the education work, the media work, the literature work, the health work, and it gives a full breadth of the Seventh-day Adventist Church's work in the world so that they can understand that. Then you get to the section on Christian lifestyle, where it has an overview of why, the balance between faith and works and how we're to understand how they work and how they're integrated together, and then talks about Sabbath observance, reverence, stewardship, health, modesty, purity, and entertainment, and those types of things, not loving the world, etc., and then marriage and family. Then the cycle of evangelism. Talks about the whole cycle, an overview, then how to prepare the soil, how to sow the seed, how to cultivate with Bible studies, how to harvest and preserve through discipleship, and invites them at the end to become a mentor themselves of somebody, to win souls themselves, and to become a mentor and make disciples themselves. The whole idea of discipleship is that you're making disciples who make disciples. That's the whole idea. So that's how the book concludes. So I'd really encourage you, if you haven't read this book, we had a committee of pastors. Mark is on the committee. Cameron is on the committee. I'm on the committee. We have Stacy Shefka on the committee. We have Gene Hall was on the committee. Jeff Ackenberger was on the committee. We have about seven or eight of us. And it was brutal. We really edited and edited and edited and tried to really hone in on the things that were most important and put it in the most logical sequence and everything else. And we believe that God really had His hand over it, because it was something that no one of us could have done. It really, it was something that the Lord just kind of pulled all together. And we've already seen some wonderful things. I've got one, a guy who met me in the hallway, and he was telling me about how the first person he took through the discipleship handbook was his son. And it changed his son's life. And he want, and now they've got a PowerPoint they use to use the discipleship handbook in their church and whatever. And he wanted to give them to me and what have you. Thinking about trying to get him up on soul winning hour. But the bottom line is, you do not want to baptize someone and then assume that they're going to become integrated into the church. Assume that they're going to become a soul winner. Assume that they're going to understand the things that you understand. You really need an intentional, systematic way of loving them and mentoring them into the life and work of the church. And that's what the intention of this is.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.